afternoon and welcome on in to Kildare Focus. You are listening to KFM. My name is Caoimhe Harney. I'll be with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Caroline Reedy. She's the Managing Director of the HR Suite. A new survey shows that almost half of people have encountered bullying or harassment in the workplace. And she'll also be telling us why you should be on your best behaviour at your work Christmas party. We'll be speaking to Owen Corey. He's a travel and aviation journalist. He's also an Ard Cloch resident. He'll be talking about laser pen attacks on planes that were landing in Dublin Airport last week. Apparently, it's extremely dangerous and experts say it's comparable to firing a weapon at an aircraft. Then Owen Beattie will be catching up with Senator Mark Wall about the ongoing issues of traffic in Athy. And we'll be speaking then to Julie Garland. She's the Vice Chair of the Unmanned Aircraft Association of Ireland. Parents are being warned about buying drones for their children this Christmas. Some of them are toys, but some of them are actually classed as aircrafts. Then we'll be catching up with Dr. Vincent McDerby. Do you have a child that is wired to the moon at night time, can't sleep because they are so, so excited for Santa? Well, Vincent will be telling us all how to manage our children's Christmas excitement. Of course, if you want to get in touch with the show, it's 0833 97 97 97. If you want to call us, it's 045 898 999. Or you can email us at studio@kfmradio.com.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
So the latest workplace equality survey by Matrix Recruitment has revealed that the majority of workers in Ireland say they have experienced discrimination in some form at work. Now joining me on the line is Caroline Reedy. She is the Managing Director of the HR Suite. Good afternoon, Caroline.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great. Caroline, I'm seeing here 71% of workers have experienced some form of discrimination in their workplace. 54% increase on last year's findings. Would you have any reason why that might be, or in your own line of work, have you seen that trend?
I think what we're noticing is because people have transitioned back to a hybrid type of work scenario in a lot of cases, that we're starting to notice people are finding that invasion of their space and the lack of control that they had when they were working fully remote at home is starting to cause issues. So simple things like the temperature control or, you know, issues in relation to, you know, people feeling, well, I'm being treated differently because I'm working at home, or I'm missing out on something that's happening in the office a day that I'm maybe at home, that we're starting to see more and more of those kind of grievances becoming more, I suppose, common in the workplace, whereas before they would have been nipped in the bud much more easily. So I think it's a transition phase, and that doesn't take from the fact that people may be experiencing genuine issues that are really impacting them as well. But we're definitely starting to notice those type of minor issues escalating into more major issues because of this transition phase we're in.
Okay, so this survey, it's in its fifth year now, and it surveys more than 2,700 adults. It covers a wide range of workplace issues, including discrimination, racism, workplace bullying and gender pay gaps. 29% of people surveyed said that they had experienced sexual harassment, while 1 in 4 said that they had been stereotyped because of their gender. Is this something you hear often, Caroline?
I think we've really improved our focus on dignity and respect and diversity and inclusion in the work environment. So I'm surprised to see it as prevalent as that, particularly when we've had a new bullying code of practice from the Health and Safety Authority and the WRC. And we've also had a new harassment code of practice this year from IREC, which means that there's been a big spotlight and a big focus that employers need to proactively try and train and raise awareness so that we're very focused on prevention rather than having issues. So from that perspective, I think many employers have done very good training in the last 12 months. So I'm surprised that there is such high levels, because when we do the training, people's awareness increase. But what we are finding is with people using technology so much now, that people are putting, for example, a picture that they're sharing to a number of their WhatsApp groups into a work group, and that potentially could be a breach of harassment or sexual harassment. And a lot of the people in those scenarios are saying, I never realised by sharing what I thought was a joke or was banter, and that escalates into a more serious issue. So I think that awareness piece, we still have a lot more way to go based on those findings.
Okay, so obviously social media and an online presence there causing issues, Caroline. I have a text in here to 0833 97 97 97, and it actually ties in well with the next findings, that religious discrimination, 24% of respondents said that they did actually feel that they were discriminated against because of their religion. And this texter says, my boss won't give me Friday mornings off, even though in my religion it is a holy obligation. In that situation, Caroline, what would you say to that texter?
I think it's important to exhaust the internal procedures with your employer, because sometimes the balance of the requirement, ultimately we need to try and accommodate somebody if they've got religious beliefs or requirements. But ultimately, I suppose this needs to be something that's flagged from the outset, because this might be a job, you know, specific critical issue. But however, we need to not discriminate or treat somebody differently. And sometimes there can be accommodations made. So accommodations might mean that people, for example, need time to pray at different times of the day to suit the religious beliefs that they have. And again, normally accommodations can be made in that regard. So I think it's important to identify what accommodations can be made to ensure that there's a balance between the business requirements and the person's religious beliefs. And I do believe a balance can be met if both parties really do make the effort to try and achieve that.
Okay. Of those surveyed, Caroline, some said that they had witnessed bullying or they had been bullied themselves. Nearly half said it involved remarks about appearance, sexual orientation, race or gender. That was 47%. Bullying and workplace harassment, would it be quite commonplace?
I would say not so much, Caoimhe, on the basis of direct bullying and harassment. People's awareness has improved hugely in that area, so we don't see it as prevalent. However, you've got a vulnerable group of people who are the new people starting in any organisation. Mm. And also, I suppose, that balance between office banter and what is acceptable in terms of appropriate behaviour in line with dignity and respect. And I think oftentimes it's the banter that goes too far. It's the sharing of that picture example that I gave you. It's those type of things we're starting to see now. And it's really raising awareness around that. And remember, employers have a responsibility under the health and safety legislation that they need to do what we call vicarious liability, which is do all they can to prevent this type of behaviour happening in the work environment. And the best way to do that is not alone to draft a policy, but to also do complementary training to go with that.
Okay, so it's those grey areas of maybe it might not necessarily mean to be bullying, but the other person on the receiving end feels that it is bullying to them. In regards to someone who might be bullied in work, Caroline, what advice would you give them if you feel like you're being harassed or bullied in work?
First thing I would do is, you know, make sure that we say psychic communication and psychic management doesn't work, because oftentimes the person may genuinely not realise that whatever is happening might be causing you upset. So if you feel it's safe and appropriate and you feel confident in doing so, the first opportunity of nipping it in the bud and having that initial conversation is always best. But in some scenarios, employees don't feel confident to do that. So then we have to go to the policies and the procedures. So the policies will outline options like mediation, options like going to a contact person within the work environment. Again, all things the employer is obliged to have in place to facilitate the person who mightn't be sure what to do. The contact person appointed in their organisation can signpost them in line with their policy to help them address the issue. Because one thing we know for sure is if it's causing upset to the person, it needs to be addressed. The longer it goes on, the more it'll fester, and that won't be good for any of the parties involved.
Okay. Almost everyone who took part in the survey, 92%, Caroline's, feel that there is a glass ceiling for women in the workplace in Ireland. Opportunities in the workplace were equal for both men and women. Only 19% said that, while more than half, 56%, feel men have more opportunities to move up the career ladder. In your line of work and in your everyday workings, would you see that, Caroline?
Being honest, I think, you know, we've come a long way in terms of our ways of working and our guiding principles. So in general now, I would say we've quite a positive work environment because it's an employee's market now. I mean, we've full employment. If people don't get treated appropriately in whatever way, they're going to go somewhere else. And, you know, we're going to see the absence. People join organisations and leave managers or leave a culture that's not supportive of their development, etc. So I think what we see in most organisations now is generally positive behaviour. And hopefully this survey is flagging, you know, experiences that we're are going to be a thing of the past when they do this survey this time next year.
Yeah, well, listen, please God. Caroline, before I let you go, obviously, we're coming up to Christmas. The Christmas parties are going. And I wanted to ask you a question in relation to etiquette at a workplace or a Christmas party, you know, a work Christmas party. Do work rules apply at a Christmas party, even if it's not at the workplace?
So 100% yes. And it's a great, great question because the amount of people that say to us, God, I never realised that if something happened outside of work, that that was still counted as a workplace issue. So it doesn't matter whether you're away on a business trip or you're at the work Christmas party. If it's connected to work, it's a work event and the dignity and respect standards still apply. And obviously, when you've got the cocktail of potentially alcohol and, you know, intoxicants, we always have to be super careful to remind people that that standard still remains because, as I say, oftentimes people would say, look, my intent was not to call upset, cause upset, but unfortunately, intent isn't going to come into play if there's an issue around harassment or sexual harassment. So always just awareness. And I think even this interview hopefully might, you know, remind people as we come into the festive season, just to remember dignity and respect will still apply.
Okay. Caroline, would you think that managing directors or managers might even be looking out for people's behaviour and conduct at these parties?
I think that it's important that they do, being honest, because their obligation is to ensure that there's nothing inappropriate that's going to happen. So I do think, you know, the more senior you are in the organisation, the higher level of being an ambassador you are, even though everybody in the organisation is an ambassador for the high standards of culture we have in place. But I think definitely leading by example with the highest leaders in the organisation is definitely key to ensuring this culture of positive dignity and respect really does apply.
Okay, great advice there from Caroline. And if you are heading out to a work party tonight, a Christmas party, make sure to be on your best behaviour. That is Caroline Reedy, Managing Director of the HR Suite. Thank you very much, Caroline, for joining us.
A pleasure, Caoimhe. Thank you for your time.
Bye-bye. Now, I'm joined in studio by Eoin Beattie, who is going to tell us about a report by An Garda Síochána, which reveals almost 500 reports of domestic violence so far this year. Ahead of the Christmas period, Gardaí say there may be a spike in domestic violence and have urged people experiencing domestic abuse to come forward. Eoin, tell us more.
Yeah, almost 50,000 reports of domestic violence reported throughout the course of this year, a 9% increase in reports this year than the previous. It means that effectively Gardaí responded to calls about domestic violence every 10 minutes. Since 2019, 481 incidents of coercive control have been recorded to date, including 173 incidents this year alone. There have been 58 charges brought in relation to coercive control since 2020, with 23 of those charges occurring this year. Detective Superintendent Sinead Green said that there have been 15 convictions for coercive control so far and that more cases are due before the courts. Ahead of the Christmas period, Gardaí say that there may be a spike in domestic violence and have urged people experiencing domestic abuse to come forward and make a report. report on Garda Síochána said that under Operation Fuisiv, the vulnerable and victims of abuse will continue to receive the highest priority from an Garda Síochána. More than 90% of Garda members have received specific training to deal with cases of coercive control, and extra training is also being provided on the application and prosecution of domestic violence orders. As we know, there are a range of supports out there for people who are experiencing domestic violence, and you can get more information online. The likes of Women's Aid, Men's Aid, you've Chuck Terman here in Kildare, Safe Ireland as well, and a wide range of other supports to go online. All the information is on our website and also on the various sites as well online, Caoimhe.
Thanks for that update, Eoin. Yeah, I have the number here for the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. It's 1-800-77-8888. Chuck Charman helpline is 045-527-584. And then Women's Aid is 1-800-341-900. And Men's Aid is 01-554-3811. Do stay tuned. Coming up after the break, we'll be speaking to Eoin Corey. He's a travel and aviation journalist. Laser pens attacked planes landing at Dublin Airport last week. Eoin will be catching up with Senator Mark Wall about the ongoing traffic issues in Athy. And then we'll be speaking to Julie Garland. She's Vice Chair of the Unmanned Aircraft Association of Ireland. She is urging parents to be careful about buying drones as presents for their children this Christmas. Stay tuned.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, at least five aircraft were targeted in laser attacks as they came in to land at Dublin Airport on one night last week. The attacks forced the pilots to take evasive action. The Irish Independent did reveal this today, and joining me on the line now is travel and aviation journalist Eoin Corey, and of course, the most important, Ard Clock resident.
Most important, our clock is magical this afternoon now with the beautiful, beautiful snow still on the ground from last night. Good afternoon, Caoimhe.
Good afternoon, Eoin. Eoin, tell us, what is this laser attack?
We've seen it a few times. Sometimes it's activists, sometimes it's just mischief makers. They point a laser at an aircraft coming in. Obviously, you can blind an individual very quickly with a laser. We've seen it also in things like penalty shootouts and soccer matches, fans using it, all of those sort of things. But it really, you know, you can overstate the danger of it, because it'll take a lot more to debilitate an aircraft coming into land, particularly with the technology at their disposal. But that is not to say that it's not immensely worrying that someone would do this. Someone would do it on five different occasions to aircraft. And while the Irish Aviation Authority aren't very panic-stricken about this, it's a matter of huge concern, and obviously the Gardaí will investigate and bring prosecutions if they can on anyone who does this, because of the potential serious risk, and I emphasise potential.
Okay, Eoin, when we talk about lasers, like, these are literally the little hand lasers that some kids could
lasers
have.
They hurt you if you get it in the eye. You know, occasional nonsense happens, you know, on Friday night in Dublin and stuff like that, with people pointed in people's faces. It's been, you know, there are different, there's nearly always a malevolent reason for doing so. Sometimes to distract someone, or, you know, to try and get a situation where they can be mugged or robbed and whatever. But it is quite painful to get it directly in the eye. Obviously, it's been done from quite a distance for an aircraft, but it's an unfortunate aspect that this technology is in the hands of people who have malevolent purposes.
On this instance, was there more than one laser, like, at one time, Eoin?
We don't know whether it was just one individual. The fact that five different aircraft were targeted doesn't mean that there was more than one. We've seen activists in the past disrupting air travel, most famously Christmas a couple of years ago. I think it was at Gatwick Airport, where they used drones. Obviously, a drone is an easier thing to trace back to the mischief maker than a laser. But we have seen prosecutions in other locations where the technology that I say that has fallen into these people's hands, the technology for tracking them down is also there and has been used to good effect in other administrations. It's new to Ireland, pretty much new to Ireland. We've had there was some sort of attempts to disrupt aviation traffic not far from where I'm sitting talking to you in Western Airport a few years ago. They used balloons. We've seen drones used in the past, but it's fairly new to see a laser attack.
So in this jurisdiction then, we wouldn't have ever had anyone brought before the courts because of this?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Owen, in terms of flying today and the situation out there, I know earlier on there was issues with planes de-icing their windows, etc. Do you know any update there?
Yeah, we've lost about four cancellations inbound, four mainly English, four cancellations outbound. The one that still hasn't taken off or won't be taking off now is a Heathrow flight at 6:30. We've had at this stage over 100 flights delayed. The main reason, and there's a lot of finger-pointing and stuff going on, and you've got to remember that while the airports are the responsibility of the runways are the responsibility of the airport, the de-icing is the responsibility of the airlines. Not as simple as it sounds, because this is usually contracted out to a third-party handler. They're the aviation services people who look after everything at the airport, including handling of baggage, and we know how that ended up this summer. Mm-hmm. So we've had 4 o'clock this morning, the de-icing got underway, and a lot of the aircraft needed to be de-iced again. There seems to be some question whether the forecast had been clear enough for the companies to say that we'll have to de-ice twice. But they did have to do that, and some of the aircraft taken off were caught very badly. 4 or 5 hours. So you claims on Twitter unverified of a 6-hour delay. But the knock-on from that, Cleaver, has been quite dramatic in that because it's the first time in 3 years that they've had to deal with a cold snap like this at the airport. So the de-icing, staffing levels, machinery, everything like that probably wasn't up to the speed, particularly in the staffing side. And we've seen a knock-on in the baggage hall today where the companies that were allocating resources to de-icing found other services not being run as efficiently or as possible. It's, as I say, everything that we at the airport, when numbers got back up again and we saw the first big day of it, this is the first big day we've had of de-icing, and I'd like to think this cold snap is going to hang around for a few days. I'd like to think the coming days would be better.
Okay, so if you are flying out of Dublin or indeed any airport today, maybe check in with your flight or whoever you're flying with.
Keep an eye on the airport, the airline. The airline alerts have been very good. They also keep an eye on the Dublin Airport app, which gives you security times and also the takeoff times. If you're looking at delays popping up at those very first flights in the morning to Frankfurt and Lisbon and Amsterdam, make sure you get there a little bit earlier. There was a little bit of problem clearing aprons and things like that this morning, but the runway seemed to have been cleared. The problem seemed to be on the de-icing of aircraft side.
Okay, Owen, that is Owen Carey there.
Always a great pleasure, Cleaver.
Thank you very much, Owen Carey, travel and aviation journalist, and of course, Ardclock resident. Now, joining me in Studio 2 is Owen Beattie, and he is catching up with Senator Mark Wall, of course, Labour Senator. There are ongoing traffic issues there in Athy. Owen.
Well, every morning here on KFM over the last couple of weeks, we've been highlighting the traffic issues in and out of Athy. This is as a result of the roadworks that are currently taking place to do with the Ring Road. And on the line now is Labour Senator Mark Wall, of course, a resident down in the Athy area. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon to you, Owen.
This Ring Road had been coming for quite some time, 40 years in the making, and it was widely welcomed. And unfortunately, while there's good work being done, it's causing some headaches for people in the town of Athy.
Yeah, it is very important to put on the record, Owen, that this road is progressing and progressing very quickly. If you come into Athy from either the Kilkenny Road or the Dublin Road or indeed the Carlow Road, you will notice the works that come across the rocks, and it is very important, you know, that we acknowledge the fact that the road is coming, and the road is progressing so quickly that, you know, that we are hoping to have the road open, or councils, more importantly, are hoping to have the road open in early 2024, which is good news. One of the biggest issues, I suppose, with the road at the moment is the bridge, the single span bridge over the River Barrow, and I'm told work is progressing on that, but would probably major works for that part of the road won't start until the new year. So that's one of the big issues, and that will, people will see the spans of the bridge actually on the site at the moment, but as I say, it won't be actually in place until probably early new year. But the road is progressing. Unfortunately, that has brought problems, as you say, and a lot of those problems were people who were living along the Carra Road in particular, who were trying to get out of their estates in the early morning. So this morning, I had a meeting with Kildare County Council on this, and we went through a number of items in relation to that own. The council are now going to meet with BAM, who are actually the road constructors, and they're going to address a number of issues. One of the issues, I suppose, was the lights and how long the lights are taking to change, and that's going to be addressed with council, and particularly for the housing estates, Ockerbauer, Chanterland, and Kingsgrove, etc. Those particular residents were finding it very difficult to get out of their estates, so that's going to be looked at as well. These are issues, particularly around school times, that were causing a lot of problems for people along there. But thankfully, after this morning's meeting, we should see some progress. I suppose the big issue as well is that we need those roadworks to finish up as quickly as possible. I'm told that the roadworks on the Atai side of the Carlow Road, if you want to call it that, have substantially been finished. And it's just the ones on the Carlow side of that junction that need to be finished now on. There is a problem with labour, I'm told, that charges that are feeding into the delays, and there's a lot of services on site as well that have also fed into the delays. But thankfully, it's just the Carlow site needs to be finished, and that is progressing, and hopefully we will see some quicker resolution to that now after this morning's meeting.
As I say, every morning on our traffic updates, one of the roads that are causing particular headaches are the roads in and out of Athy. Some listeners saying that it's added quite a lot of time now to their morning commute because they have to take alternative routes. And I'm assuming as well there might be some concern among businesses in Athy that a lot of people now are going to start bypassing the town because they don't want to sit in the traffic.
Yeah, look, that's an issue, and it's an issue I addressed with the council this morning. And, you know, we take on board that this road was 40 years coming, and we take on board that it will bring terrific benefits to the town of Athy, but we also need to see those particular set of works finished as quickly as possible. There's also an issue in relation to pedestrian crossing that I've asked to address this morning as well. I've had a number of people come on to me expressing concern about the pedestrian crossing that exists on the Carlow Road. That's also going to be looked at as well. Much more signage is needed there on as well. But in relation to the businesses, I think the businesses are accepting that there will be this delay at the moment. But obviously coming into a Christmas period, they're anxious enough that everyone is shopping local. And I support that too. And that's one of the reasons I met with council and asked them to meet with me this morning. We need to see these works completed. And more obviously, we need to see the road opened as quickly as possible. And as I say, that is progressing, and it's terrific news for the town of Athy.
Did the council give you a timeline as to how long these roadworks are going to continue for?
There's a meeting happening this afternoon, Friday afternoon, in relation to that, as a result of the meeting that I requested this morning, just to get an update on things. Are, as I said, one of the problems is the availability of labour, just for those issues around. There are an awful lot of services, but I've expressed the concerns of many residents and indeed businesses this morning on. And as I say, the roadworks on the Athy side of the junction have been substantially finished, and we're just waiting on the roadworks there around the vocational school to be finished. And I've expressed concerns that they need to be done as quickly as possible. So we're hoping that they will be done as quickly as possible. And that has been, there's a meeting going on today in relation to that. But once they're done, then, you know, it's the road itself that's left to be done, which is all the people of Athy really want at this stage, to want the road open.
Okay, Labour Senator Mark Wall with that update. Thanks, Mark, and good afternoon.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks for that, Owen. Now, parents are being warned about buying drones for their children this Christmas. And joining me now on the line is Julie Garland, Vice Chair of the Unmanned Aircraft Association of Ireland. Julie, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Kiva. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Julie, what should parents be looking out for when they're buying a drone? Like, not every drone is a toy.
For sure. For starters, there's a very distinct categorisation of a toy, which is, you know, a very small little drone that's built in a way that it's designed for children, say, who are under 14 years of age. So it's very safe. The propellers are normally enclosed on it, and you would be able to fly it indoors or outdoors, and it won't do any damage. Once you get into the category of drones that we're really talking about, which are drones that have cameras on board and drones that are much more, can be utilised in lots of other ways, they're not toys. They're not deemed to be toys. And when you purchase one of these for your child to fly or to operate, you must register as an operator of that aircraft. It is an aircraft. If it's above 250 grams or if it has a camera on it, you must register as an operator. So these are things. So it's really looking at how old is the child. The child should only fly the drone under supervision. They shouldn't be allowed outdoors flying this aircraft unless they're being supervised by a responsible adult.
Okay, so over 250 grams, and then you also have to register. Where do you register if you do buy one of these drones?
Yeah, so you register on the Irish Aviation Authority's website. So if you go on, it's iaa.ie. The IAA have just done a big safety promotion day, which we were involved in, and they've been really publicising. It's very easily accessible, iaa.ie, and click in there. And on the front page, on the cover page of their website, there's a section there on drones. Click into that. There's a registration link there, and you can click into that. It's called MySRF, My Safety Registration System. And it brings you in there. It's very easy to do. It costs €30 to register, but it is a legal requirement once you're drone is above 250 grams, or even if your drone is below 250 grams and has a camera on it, you must register. You're legally obliged to register.
Okay, so ideally then, Julie, these drones wouldn't be for children under, or people under 18 then, if they have to be registered, is it?
The idea is that the industry wants to encourage people. It's actually 16 is the registration age, so you must be 16 or over in order to register on the IAA's website. But the idea is that they are actually encouraging, you know, children and younger people to use these aircraft. And they're much more adept often with their affinity to computer games and all of that, you know, to actually be able to fly these and fly them very successfully. But it just has to be under supervision. So the operator, the person who's responsible for the operation of that aircraft is an adult. But the person who's actually flying it can be a child as long as they're under the direct supervision of that adult. And that adult is the person who's the operator. So they're taking the legal responsibility for what happens with that aircraft when the child is flying it.
Okay, so supervision is key there. In regards then to the cameras, because I actually I thought all drones had cameras, to be honest with you, Julie. If the drone does have a camera on it, you know, when your child is flying it over whatever a field or in, like if you're flying over someone's back garden and you take a video, like what are the implications there?
Yeah, so I mean, everybody's entitled to their privacy, and I think there should be, and I've said this before, a huge dose of common sense applied, and sometimes common sense isn't so common. So, you know, if you wouldn't take that photograph with your mobile phone, you have no business taking it with your with a camera on a drone. I mean, you wouldn't peep through your neighbor's fence and take a photograph of them in the garden using your phone. So you certainly shouldn't do it with a drone. You know, there's a data protection requirements there. Privacy. We need to respect other people's privacy when we're flying or unmanned aircraft. And it's really about what you do with the data that you record and gather while you're flying your drone. So it's just making sure that, you know, if you end up when you're reviewing material that you realize that you have inadvertently, you know, captured somebody's image that, you know, that you shouldn't have, well, then you should delete that data, you know, and just delete the video. You know, make sure that you're conscious of your neighbours and you're polite and, you know, and that you do respect their privacy, because we are all entitled to our privacy. Having said that, your image in a public place is not protected. So therefore, you know, if you are captured, I mean, we're all captured, you know, hundreds and thousands of times a day as we walk down the street with CCTV cameras and so on. So your image when you're in a public place isn't actually protected. But having said that, you should be very conscious of people's privacy whenever you're operating a drone.
Okay, good advice there. Julie, in regards to people who potentially live in rural areas, I did read an article there, I think sometime last year, where low-flying drones can often upset livestock. Are there any rules around that?
There's no rules around it, but again, I would say the common sense really needs to prevail. So what we actually were at the ploughing championships this year, my company Aptrain, we were down at the ploughing championships and talking to a lot of farmers around using, you know, unmanned aircraft drones in so many different guises. So everything to do with, you know, counting animals, looking for lost animals, but even in agricultural settings, like, you know, crop spraying and monitoring of crops and targeting them. What I would say is generally, horses in general don't really bother too much about an unmanned aircraft, but this is a total generalization. Cows will come over and have a look at you. Sheep will run through a fence to try and get away from it. you know, and dogs will try and grab them out of the sky. So you need to be really, really conscious. Different dogs have different attitudes towards them, but dogs generally will go nuts. They really don't like the frequency of sound of the propellers, and they will jump up and try, and they will really hurt the animal. And so be safe. Do you know, stay safe distances away from animals. If you see the animals getting at all agitated, make sure and fly the drone away. Don't fly it anywhere close to animals. You don't know how the animals individually are going to respond. Some even think that it's like what are called bot flies, which can really, really drive an animal mad, because they're very wary of them, because a bot fly gets onto an animal and goes under their skin and causes real harm. And a drone can sound like that sometimes to an animal. So just be really, stay safe distances away from animals and people. We talk about uninvolved people, and it's about mitigating and managing the risk around uninvolved people, whether they're on the ground or in the air. But that should also apply to animals too, because they don't know it's a drone. They can't look up and go, oh, that's okay, it's just a drone up there. You know, they don't have that ability to define or to differentiate it. So, yes, staying clear is the safest option.
Okay, well, that is Julie Garland, Vice Chair of the Unmanned Aircraft Association of Ireland. If you are planning on buying your child a drone for Christmas this year, if it's over 250 grams or 250 or over, or if it has a camera, it has to be registered with the IAA, and it costs €30 to register there. So make sure you do that. And if your child is under 16, they also need to be supervised if they are using these drones. That is Julie Garland, Vice Chair of the Unmanned Aircraft Association. Coming up after the break, we'll be speaking to Vincent McDarby. He'll be talking about how to manage your child's excitement over the Christmas. Stay tuned.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney.
Now, is your child wired to the moon at night time? Can't sleep because they're so excited for Santa to come? Well, we are joined on the line by Dr. Vincent McDarby. He is the president of the Psychological Society of Ireland, and he's going to tell us how to manage your child's Christmas excitement. Dr. McDarby, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. How are things?
First off, you do have a child, and you know, this time of year it's so hard because kids are, you know, they're really excited, they can't sleep. I remember when I was younger, even Christmas Eve, like I just would be, you know, I'd nearly wet the bed just to not have to go out because I'd be afraid Santa wouldn't come if I left my bed, you know. And how do you deal with that kind of thing with young children?
Yeah, well, I suppose, look, the first thing we acknowledge is, you know, children have difficulty regulating their emotions, you know, which is understandable. I mean, their brains are still developing. I mean, the frontal lobe, which is the part of the brain that actually regulates emotion, it doesn't actually fully form until probably age 24, 25. So it's completely understandable that children have difficulties regulating emotions, which means they can get excited very easily or they can get upset very easily. And it's often where you'll see children go from kind of being very upset to very happy very quickly and vice versa. And we know there's certain situations under which, you know, children get overwhelmed, you know, and become what we call emotionally dysregulated. And, you know, the times that most parents would notice is when a child is tired, they get emotionally dysregulated very easily. When they're hungry, when we disrupt their routine, but also when there's excitement. Do you know what I mean? So, Santa is one of the most exciting things for young children. So, of course, they're going to get dysregulated. So it's about trying to kind of calm them down, give them a degree of predictability and try and just kind of settle them again, kind of bring their levels down.
Okay. And I know on the way, you know, in lead up to Christmas, like there's always that tendency. I know, like my parents used to do it and many do that. Oh, well, Santa won't come if you do this. And then when the child is bold, they become nearly overly upset and anxious that they've done something wrong. And now, you know, Santa's not going to come. What advice would you give in regards to that kind of thing?
Well, I suppose be mindful of the fact that they're excited. So they're really, you know, again, they're starting to get dysregulated emotionally. Even though it's a positive emotion, they have a lot of difficulty handling it. So, you know, they go from really exciting, then you threaten something like Santa's going to come, they can get very upset very quickly, you know. So before we start, you know, threatening a punishment or Santa isn't going to come, if we see them starting to get, you know, because particularly when they're excited, you know, they engage in behavior, misbehavior, things that we think is bold. So the first thing we need to do before we start, you know, implementing a punishment or, you know, threatening Santa's going to come is try and just calm them down. Do you know what I mean? Which means just kind of taking a step back, you know, giving, you know, whatever's causing the stimulation. Remember at Christmas, a lot of exciting things coming on. Granny is calling over and cousins are coming over and off school and there's sweets and everything. So we need to just trying to get a bit of calm. And the most important thing you can do when a child is starting to get emotionally dysregulated or excited is that you keep calm yourself. Because that's how children learn to regulate emotion. It's called co-regulation. So children aren't great at regulating their own emotions, and how they learn it is by adults remaining calm around them. But, you know, coming up to Christmas, we get emotionally dysregulated. Mm. We have a lot of things on our plate. We have a lot of things to do, you know, and if a child is misbehaving, that can be the straw that breaks the camel's back. So it's really, really important that we model regulated emotions, that we don't match unregulated emotions with more unregulated emotions.
Okay, so stay calm. Like you said there, you know, children, when they're out of routine, can get easily upset. Of course, Christmas is a time where many people will be going back to their parents' house with their kids, or maybe even going overseas to, you know, to visit relatives. So they might be in transit, flying, then driving, and then they're sleeping in a different room, different bed. What advice would you give in that situation?
I said, number one, be mindful of the impact that it has on children. You know, I mean, children, you know, most children love, you know, going to granny's house or going away, you know, going somewhere different from Christmas. It's all part of the excitement, you know. You know, it isn't necessarily a negative experience, but it just can mean that they get dysregulated. So, you know, we need to take that into account, that these are situations, like I said, there's certain situations that mean the children can get upset more easily, like when they're tired, like when they're hungry, like, you know, when we're sleeping in a, you know, in a strange bed. So we need to acknowledge that. We need to take it into account, and most importantly, we need to keep calm. You know, if we respond by raising our voice and getting angry, we actually just inflame the situation.
Okay, and would you say, you know, obviously you're saying it's hard for children when they're not in a routine, but would you think it's okay over the Christmas to kind of just loosen the routine and maybe just go with the flow a little bit more?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'm not saying that you need to stick to a routine or anything like that. I mean, of course we're out of the routine over Christmas. You know, I mean, school is off, you know, we're sleeping in, and that's all part of the fun and the enjoyment of Christmas, you know. But it's just being mindful that, you know, when children get out of routine like that, sometimes they can get upset easier, you know.
Okay. Any advice for the kids who won't sleep at night now because of the excitement for Santa?
I don't know. When I was young, I think we used to be given a spoonful of whiskey to help us sleep, but I don't think that's good parenting advice anymore.
Okay, well, I'm not going to give that advice, but yeah, it's not a bad one. That is Dr. Vincent McDarby, President of the Psychological Society of Ireland. Please don't give your children whiskey before they go to bed. We can't condone that kind of thing in KFM. I think they used to do that years ago. I heard they'd soak cork in whiskey and give it to a child who was teething, actually, Dr. McDarby. So you're not too far off the money there.
Okay. Cheers. Then.
And that is Dr. Vincent McDarby, President of the Psychological Society of Ireland. And he was telling us there how to manage your child's excitement over the Christmas.